Always Yearning by Miguel Maravilla from the Always EP here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. I'm Jesse. World Media in English is a people's project to bring media in world languages to the global community in English translations and interpretations. Media coverage of issues of vital importance to communities from around the world are translated, with an effort to include interpretation of social, political, and cultural context as seen from the perspectives of speakers of the original languages. All reports and analyses are contributed by volunteer global citizens according to guidelines for submissions and are open to public comment and discussion. Every once in a while, I have Ramtin in the studio to talk with me about a particular story that has captured his interest or that is particularly important. And a couple weeks ago, I had the chance to speak with Ramtin, and I'll let him take it away.
Hi, Jesse, and hello to our listeners. This past week came the anniversary of injury and death of a 22-year-old woman having been arrested by Morality Patrol of Iran's police for showing too much of her hair from under her mandatory headscarf. This was by no means the first time a citizen of this country was injured or murdered by agents of the regime, but it was the first time the story would become international news so much. And it is a very good thing that it did so, and we should remember that any stories like this anywhere should become international news. What happened to this young woman named Mahsa Amini and people's reactions and fights that shaped in various spheres of social life, streets, social media, public diplomacy and advocacy and arts, and what was lost and what was gained were recorded in English much better than in the past, and I don't want to repeat them. But as World Media in English, we are interested in understanding and possibly learning from the question why this particular story became so international in the first place. Many of the answers given to this question really explain why the story found so much empathy and spread so widely, more than why it became a story to begin with. For a story like this to be considered credible, it needs to be based on more than hearsay and anecdotal evidence. The photo of this young woman in coma on a hospital bed shows injuries to her ears. The government claimed that she had had a previous condition and had suffered a stroke in their custody. Despite being pressured to cooperate, her father and uncle denied the claim of a pre-existing condition and called these claims lies. In addition, besides this regime's long-standing record of throwing dissidents in jails healthy and sending them out dead, the same police patrols had been filmed by citizen journalists before, rough-handling women on the streets. There was no doubt in the minds of the people that this was another state killing as usual, out of nothing more than sicknesses that worst criminals suffer from, added with impunity the perpetrators get from their bosses. Combined with the fact that this time the victim had not even been any kind of an activist who had challenged the regime in any way, the people's anger brought them on the streets, which in the next months resulted in hundreds more of them being shot dead or blinded by pellet guns aimed at their eyes, and thousands being arrested and jailed, and five executed. A much smaller number of the regime thugs, who by now have been on the streets for several years to carry out these crimes of suppression, were caught in self-defense and beaten by the protesters. Convergence of the strength of evidence and drama of the people's uprising took this story to the top of international news, and this was very good for public awareness. But what price was paid for the increased public awareness? Beside Mahsa's life and lives of the dead and the injured and the jailed, the family's pains will never go away, and they will never get justice. Also, an important fact rarely mentioned internationally was that a journalist who went to Mahsa's hospital, in parentheses to whom the photo is attributed, and her colleague who contacted Mahsa's family were both thrown in jail, and they are still there against the laws of the regime itself. The price paid, however tragic, will make a difference. The regime will adjust its behavior, at least to an extent, where crimes this visible won't happen again. But we should ask, why did it take so much for the world to hear about facts that have been so painfully felt by the natives of this country for four decades? Again, the answer is, if for whatever reason people hadn't heard about it, citizen journalism, and specifically world media in English, could and should have done it. I also want to talk about the fact that although international coverage was unprecedented, a bigger picture of what this regime is made of and how it operates and what the people's fight against it is really about were still scarce. Also, little was said about the Iranian diaspora and their actions and efforts. A whole other area of urgent concern about this country is management of its environmental resources, which also ties to the question of democracy, and which similarly, despite its importance, still hasn't found good public visibility outside the country. We are working on this project, and we will come to you about it soon.
Thanks, Ramtin. You had also previously mentioned that World Media in English has produced a video about the Mahsa Amini situation, about her killing and the regime's actions, that provides sort of a bit of that historical context that you mentioned. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. Well, first off, that video is not technically part of World Media in English. That video actually made it for myself personally, or on behalf of myself personally, and I put it on my personal YouTube channel. But I would recommend, for organizing purposes and for just raising awareness as myself, and also as a representative of World Media in English, because it does qualify as a documentary. Everything that I have said in that video is actually based on facts. There is no fiction there, even though a lot of the statements or statements that you read and stories and facts that you see in that video are shocking. I'm sure they are shocking to most people, and unexpected as well. But it's a documentary because it's all been translated and accurately so from what the professional media have said over the years about this regime. The only reason I didn't make it a project for World Media in English is, first of all, the quality I think should be better for what we put on what we produce for World Media in English. The quality of that video is just what I could do with my personal computer. It's mostly silent slides with text on them and photos, and there is a little bit of video clips with subtitles that I made in English, and actually translations of the conversations there. But still, and the more important reason beside the quality was the fact that I felt very personal about it as well. It's one of the stories in that video is the story of a young wrestler. He was, I think, second in his category in the whole country in wrestling. And wrestling is actually called the national sport of Iran. Being second, even in your own category in the country, is not an easy task, and it's a big achievement. And somebody like that, from a very, very, you know, normal, respectable family, being caught and tortured for 2 years, and, you know, nose broken, shoulder broken, because he didn't want to confess to what they wanted him to confess, and eventually being tricked into being hanged, because the night that he was going to be hanged, he actually thought that he was going to the capital to file a complaint about his tortures. And that's very cowardly, actually. You do that to a family and to a person. And that's actually something that the regime does, not only to this person. They do it to as a matter of, you know, their methodology, because you keep the person, you know, dependent on yourself, and you keep them obedient, and you can make demands of the family. You know, you promise them, we're not going to kill you, we're going to let you go, so you cooperate with us. It's a very cowardly thing, and it's not the first time that they have done something like that. And so I felt very personal about that part of that story, at least, because it's not about economy even. It's about, you know, somebody's life and a whole family. I had played a little piece I had actually improvised, or you could say composed and improvised a little piece of music just in the memory, because I know I played that music when I was under the impact of hearing the news of his hanging. That wasn't my intention when I played the music. I just took my instrument and I played something that expressed my feelings at that point. But when I listened back to it, I felt, you know, this is actually very, very closely reflecting what I was feeling about this person. And also when I put it on my social media, a lot of my friends and family applauded it as a very expressive piece of music for this tragedy. And so I wanted to also include that piece of music, and that's not journalism anymore. That's more like your own. It is journalism, the documentary part of it, but putting a piece of music in it, it's combining probably arts, if I can call it arts. That it's, I shouldn't be the one to call it arts, but it should be the audiences. But in any case, it was a personal thing, and that would disqualify it, you know, from a documentary for world media in English. But otherwise, I don't think I should refrain from referring people to it, because first of all, I mean, there's nothing wrong with hearing a little bit of music in the middle of a documentary if it expresses, you know, the maker's feelings. And secondly, the rest of it is things that we would have said on world media in English. These are a few examples I found of corruption, in this case financial corruption of this regime, and stories of their murder, of their crimes, and stories that have been actually proven, like the fact that they were shooting protesters on the street in 1998. It was actually proven by a perfect judicial process. A tribunal was set in the same way that, for example, an international court works. You had judges, you had lawyers, and they called in witnesses. Of course, witnesses were anonymous. Now, I'm not a lawyer to say that, but I'm sure what this to make an equivalency between the final decisions of this tribunal or compare it to what an international court does. But definitely, I'm sure, and what they said themselves is that what they found would qualify as evidence for an accredited international court. So what they found is, as far as you know, we are concerned as lay people, is actually valid as decisions of a court. And they found that the regime had been shooting the people. I mean, and another way that this was proven was by France 24. France 24, who just processed information that they got from Iranian citizen journalists. I mean, people became citizen journalists and they filmed what was happening on the streets, and they filmed what they could from the shooters, you know, what they could, of course. And they sent it to France 24, and France 24 actually analyzed these videos, 750 videos. And they came to the conclusion that, yes, these were people employed by the regime that were doing the shootings. And some of it is pretty obvious. I mean, you have footage of police in uniform shooting at people on the street. You have actual footage of that. Or you have footage of a shooter using a government building, which is guarded. You can't go in that government, you know, from the roof of a government building. Or you have footage of weapons that only government owns there, you know, like I don't know what they're called. It's like a van with a shotgun on top of it, and that's called Katyusha. I mean, I think something like that. And nobody has those weapons. I mean, you have to be government. And this was all caught on video. And so this regime is proven to be made of criminals, you know, and they still have embassies, you know. They come here and they get diplomatic immunity. They drive in these limousines, and that should be a scandal, you know, and people should take it as a scandal, citizens of the countries that get these, you know, diplomats. And so going back to the story of my video, these are the examples that I found and I put on that video, and it's self-contained in the sense that you don't have to go anywhere else to find out that this guy is telling you the truth. And in that sense, it's a documentary. And I refer people to watch it because... I mean, for a few reasons. First of all, I mean, if you want to learn about a country, you have to, you know, have enough background. And there is background. You can go on YouTube and listen to a lot of, you know, talk about Iran. And that the fact is that people don't do that. You know, majority of people are not in public affairs. I still urge people to find out on their own, especially on YouTube. There's a lot of, you know, stuff. Of course, I mean, something is coming from a university, something is coming from a known institution. Then you know that there is a certain amount of accreditation to what they're saying. It's not just somebody sitting in their basement and saying something. And there is also other media. And, you know, we are in media democracy. We are here to encourage and help development and growth of media democracy. And for media democracy, the fact is that you cannot just depend on media of a particular geopolitical camp in the world. On YouTube, you can see media from, if they're not banned, like I think RT is banned right now, the Russian, you know, television. I wouldn't ban it. I mean, I would let them say what they have to say and I would put it to a discussion, you know, why ban it, you know. But there are other media that are not banned from other, you would say, geopolitical, you know, camps of the world. On top of the fact that there is a lot of university, there is a lot of media from civil society and university, and I encourage people to look at it. Still, if you want to get, you know, a very, very concise picture of why a regime is a criminal, then my documentary would serve that purpose very well, and I really actually encourage people to look at it.
Great, and that's on your personal YouTube page?
That's on my personal YouTube page.
We'll put a link in the show notes on ctsf.ca.
Oh, great, okay, thank you.
That's probably the easiest way for people to find it, or they can look up your channel on YouTube?
Sure, I don't want to advertise my personal Instagram or Facebook because I'm here representing world media in English. And so I will just depend on you to just put that. You can put the link of the video or my YouTube channel, because I only have like 3 videos on the YouTube channel.
Sure.
That, you know that better. That's your journalism. You know better about that. So
yeah,
how you want to do it. But I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks for joining me today.
No, thank you very much, Jesse, and it's great to be with you. And as I said in my written notes, we're going to be working on environments from now on, because the question of democracy and human rights, it is a question that should be addressed directly. But as we started from the outset, we had our intention was to concentrate on environments and sustainable development. And in the case of this country, it actually, that ties very closely to the questions of democracy and human rights. So in a way, we are working on everything. But at the same time, it has this advantage that environment is more borderless, you know, and, mm-hmm. and less specific culturally or politically, you know. It concerns all of us in the same way. And so in that way, I think it's a very, very, it's much more appropriate for us to concentrate on environments. And we'll be working on that from now on as well.
Great. Looking forward to hearing more.
Thank you, Jesse. Thank you. See you next time.
See you next time. Thanks again to Ramtin for joining me. You can find out about World Media in English at worldmediainenglish.org, worldmediainenglish.org. You can find Ramtin's documentary on his personal YouTube page. It's also embedded and linked in the show notes for the previous episode of Speak Up, which you can find at cjsf.ca. Okay, we're right into the last 10 minutes of the show, so I promised you something a little spooky, because Halloween is coming up, and this is my last show before then. So you're going to hear some spooky local music by Blackberry Wood from their record Spooky Magic, with a K. This is Zombie Love Song.
Weird. broken weed. You lie there looking at me. I sum up the courage to speak my mind and I say, baby, can I eat your brains? We were a couple zombies in a shopping mall. We didn't want to be there at all. Cause outside that moon's shining bright. So we went down to the riverside. We almost felt alive dancing. First silent movie screen, something out of some strange dream. Filled with thistles and broken weeds, I said, baby, can I eat your brains? Yeah, we found each other in a shopping mall, and we didn't want to be there at all. Cause outside that moon was shining bright. So we
song by Blackberry Wood. And one last trip into the archives for another something a little spooky. This is Fatso Jetson, which features some of the early desert psych, desert stoner rock pioneers, influences on Kyuss and Queens of the Stone Age. From their record Stinky Little Gods, this is Corn on the Macabre. See you next week.